This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Man, it was cold this morning. I mean, really cold, dangerously cold in some places. And if you're looking at the snow drifting into the path you just cleared to your front door or forming ice dams on your roof, you might be getting a little sick of all this winter. But you can't wish it away, and you can't just go back in your hole like Punxsutawney Phil and wait for spring. You'd better get out there and enjoy it. And yes, I hear all the rest of you snowophiles yelling at your radios that you do love this weather. So maybe you can just give a pep talk to your neighbors in distress, those who are struggling to embrace the season. Today on the program, we're going to talk about ways to beat the winter blues and about the most creative, fun, and joyful ways we get through the long months of winter. If you want to share your adventures, you can post them on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. We got a note from Andrea who says, I try to find fun ways to thumb my nose at the worst, like having a summer-themed neighborhood lunch or dinner and maybe even turn up the heat a little for the party so we can pretend it's summer. I do agree, though, that if we choose to live here, the normal level of winter is to be expected. This year, though, is a little bit colder and snowier than normal, and even if the summer and fall are exquisite, the length of winter can get taxing for even the most loyal of Vermonters. Marion Pownell says, wine helps a lot. Karen in Fairley says, read. Brendan in New Haven says, pond hockey and owls calling from Vermont's hills and hollows are some of the things he loves about winter. And Margaret in Windham says, I love winter, and I have always preferred it to the heat and bugs in summer. My job has me outside a lot, so this year's been especially difficult, but I still managed to get in my runs and walking the dogs. Best advice is to stay active during the colder months and get outside. Why live here if you have to spend 5 months out of the year inside? Well, today we're going to talk about extreme sledding, other extreme athletics you can do outside. And again, if you want to share your thoughts, our number is 1-800-639-2211. We want your tips on your favorite indoor activities and outdoor activities. We'll also hear about what it takes for VTrans to make it through the winter. But a note of caution first. Earlier today, I spoke with Dr. Philip Adis, a cardiologist and professor of medicine at UVM, and he says it's not just your imagination if you think the cold is affecting your body.
Well, it actually makes your heart work harder because your body makes it a very high priority to control your body temperature. So one thing it does is it makes the blood vessels in your fingers and your toes and your face get smaller. So your heart is actually pumping against a higher pressure, so it's increased work of the heart. I would also add that large studies have shown that after cold spells, like 3 days of very, very cold weather, an increase in heart attack rates occurs. And this is particularly in older individuals or people who have known heart disease.
Is that because of the cold, or is that because of activities that people do in the cold when their heart is already working harder?
Well, good question. The studies actually don't quite drill down on that, but I can tell you that something like snow shoveling in the cold is a very, very high-risk activity. So you take someone who may be out of shape, and you put them out in the cold, which increases the work of the heart, and then you do an activity which almost all of us are not trained to do, which is shoveling heavy snow. So it's a very high-intensity exercise that will raise your heart rate, raise your blood pressure. You're already at increased stress in the cold, and we definitely see increased emergency room visits after a snowfall, and usually because of snow shoveling. I like to say, though, that snow shoveling doesn't cause heart disease. It reveals heart disease. So if you're healthy and you are trained and you snow shovel, that's just fine. But if you take a 60-year-old man who's overweight and smokes and has diabetes and snow shoveling, that may well reveal his heart disease.
Hmm. So really, all of those teenagers who complain when their parents make them shovel the snow, they should not complain, and the parents should go ahead and make your really hale and hearty teenagers do that chore.
The teenagers should not only shovel the driveway for their parents, they should shovel for their older neighbors and then maybe make a few bucks shoveling for everybody else.
Dr. Adis, when you're outside, I mean, you always hear, speaking of parents, you always have heard from your parents, put on your hat, put on your gloves. Is that actually important given that those extremities are tending to, you know, the blood is not really pumping all the way there because it's trying to conserve the core body temperature?
Absolutely. And I actually have a friend in Montreal who does research on the effects of cold in heart disease patients. And he has a large meat locker where he has a treadmill and fans and can control the temperature. And he's determined very clearly that it's the temperature of the fingers and the toes or wind in the back of your throat that will trigger the reflex to make your blood vessels get smaller and make it such that if you have a heart problem, it'll come on at a lower level. So the sorts of things your mother told you of wear your gloves, wear your boots, and wear a muffler are physiologically proven. They're not just superstition.
What about people who, I mean, for example, we have a producer here who's training for the Antarctica Marathon. So she's doing a lot of running in temperatures like this. If you mentioned that most of us aren't trained to do snow shoveling, although most of us have had to do it most of our lives.
Yeah.
But if you are an athlete, is there anything that you should be wary of if you want to go out skiing or snowshoeing or running in this weather?
Well, if you go to places like a cross-country ski area, so you go up to Sleepy Hollow or Catamount, and you ask them if they see a lot of heart problems, their answer would pretty much be it would be a very rare occurrence. And the reason for that is the people who they see are people who are trained at cross-country skiing. So the risk for someone who's trained and who trains in the cold is extremely low, and I would just salute your colleague for being an athlete and training. Frostbite and things like that she would know about, but cardiovascular problems would be very, very low in someone who's trained to cross-country ski in the cold.
Given all that you know about cardiovascular health and temperature and how it can affect things, what do you do in this cold weather, and what do you do to beat the winter?
Well, I would only avoid the really extreme cold. So I've been a runner most of my life, though no longer. And I've always run down to about 0 degrees. And the key thing is keeping your hands warm, keeping your feet warm, wear a good hat, and dress in layers. So if you live in Vermont and you don't get out, it's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
So I think one should get out and do physical activity, but at the level that one is trained for. So really, it's the rare day, such as this morning, where I would really recommend against going out because it's just so cold and there's a risk of frostbite and that sort of thing.
That's Dr. Philip Adas, a cardiologist and professor of medicine at UVM. And again, we want to hear what you do to beat back the winter blues. What makes you happy during the cold months? We got a note from Amy, who posted on Facebook to say, I'm dying to know how people survive it. As a transplant to the NEK over the coast of Florida, this winter is kicking my butt. So please help Amy, the transplant from Florida, who just needs some help on how to survive this winter weather. I know there's a lot of skiing and snowboarding, but what else? What makes you happy to live here in winter? Or if not happy, what makes it at least tolerable? For me, one of my favorite indoor activities is watching the Middlebury basketball teams go Panthers. Makes me so happy to be inside in Pepin Gymnasium in the wintertime. So what about you? What gets you through winter? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your tips and tricks at vpr.net. Let's go to Terry calling in from Brattleboro. Hey, Terry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. What gets you through winter?
Well, I wanted to make a couple comments. Number one, growing up in the 50s and 60s, winters like this are like a relief to people like myself because this is more in step of what winters used to be. The last two decades, our winters have gotten so mild, people aren't accustomed to it anymore. And being a cryophile, I snowshoe and ski, but also just bundling up and just taking a good speed walk or even a run around the mall if you don't have a lot of time. For myself, I just love the air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no particles in the air. The snow, it's just so pure and crisp and cold. I can't get enough of it. Like I said, cryophiles, we have a lot more energy this time of the year because of that. But take in the air. It's wonderful.
Yeah, Terry, I hear you. That is absolutely true. The air in wintertime is so wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. And great word, cryophile. We've got our producer, Rick Zingari, who's just thrilled to learn a new word, to be reminded of a new word. Sue in Claremont, New Hampshire says, you know, it's hard to do the recreational activities in winter between working a physical job all day and removing snow when I get home. Being in my 50s, I have no energy left over. So Sue, you might appreciate what Susan suggests. Susan says, feed the birds. Put a good suet feeder and a bird feeder outside of a window where you can watch and photograph a multitude of birds. You'll be helping them, and it will make you feel a lot better. Just remember to clean the feeder with a little bleach at least once a week and rinse and dry thoroughly. Recently, a lovely Cooper's hawk has been hanging around my feeder. They will take small birds, but they need to survive too. Dr. Adas mentioned how important it is to go outside and enjoy the outdoors, and our next guest would definitely agree. Kathy O'Brien is an extreme sled enthusiast. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, but extreme sledding? I mean, I know some adults who feel like just sitting on a sled is extreme at their age. So what are you talking about when you say extreme sledding?
I know. I think it should have another name because it isn't that extreme. But at the same time, it's you know, a challenge, but not really. So what it is there are these new sleds out locally designed too in Vermont called Hammerheads. And I use them just because I feel safe on them. So we climb Mount Philo slowly.
Mount Philo is a nice little road and trail in Chittenden County and Chilliwack for people who are unfamiliar with it.
Yeah, exactly. And we do other things like different notches too, but we come down, it's just a real high-tech sled that's so controllable. So you do wear a helmet, but it is a joy to just slowly go up the mountain and come down these sleds, and they're really well designed, so you can turn them easily. It's like almost like a little mini BMW on a sled. So then if you want to slow down, you just drag your feet. Or you can just spin around because the steering on it's so good. It's like a tuned-up, very, very well-designed, flexible flyer from the old days. And the people going up with me are 35 all the way up to age 60, and we just have so much fun coming down because you feel like a kid again.
Well, describe what that feels like when you've, you know, done the hard work of hiking up a hill or up a road, a closed road in the wintertime. You get on your sled, you push off, you start downhill. What's the feeling for you?
Well, it's exhilarating. And at the same time, it's a nice cardio workout that isn't extreme at all. You just, you know, slowly go up a mountain or even a hill. You can go down these on even kind of a lower hill slope. And you bring out friends. In fact, I have a friend on his helmet. He has a speaker that he rigged. So we're listening to his iPod with really great music as we go up and we talk, and it is cold out. But by just going up, you know, we get warm easily. And when we get to the top, we're all excited like children again. And we come down on these sleds, and people even go, when we go by them, if they're coming up, they go, what are those? And because they're just really high tech, they're safe. You know, they just spin and turn so easily. But it's just fun. I can't even say exhilarating is maybe the right word because we feel like little giddy school kids. And when we get to the bottom, we go, that is so much fun. I didn't even know it was zero out.
Kathy, you mentioned that these sleds that you use are pretty safe and they have some mechanisms for helping you to stop if you feel like you're going too fast. But do you have tips for people on how to sled safely? Because, you know, parents worry about their kids hitting trees, and certainly adults can worry about that as well.
Right. Well, first of all, when I go down some of these hills, I see adults and kids going down on the saucers. And if the mountain's too steep, you shouldn't even be on those.
So don't go on a saucer on a really steep mountain.
Yeah, none of those little plastic gizmos. I think the sled is just very well designed. So you drag your feet to stop it, but it makes sense. And when you turn the mechanism in the front, you know, hard left or hard right, it just spins. So you're facing up the mountain and it immediately stops you. I mean, to go down sitting straight up in one of those saucers, you know, there's just really not a good way to stop those. So that's why I enjoy the sled. And at the same time, you know, it's easy to pack on your back. It comes with a strap. And it's a really nice time out in the weather. And we go up sometimes even at dawn. And I know that sounds extreme, but it's so much fun to get up at 6, put our headlamps on, and right before we go to work, and we come down a mountain, and the endorphins and the joy of it all make our days so much better.
Do you feel like you have to have an extreme personality to embrace this fully, though? I mean, you've competed on the TV reality show Survivor twice, as I understand it. You've biked across the country. So you're sort of in a different league from most people. So convince the rest of us.
Yeah. So this is the deal. I brought some friends up who were naysayers, And we had about 4 or 5 inches of snow, and the sleds go much slower. I mean, certainly going down ice isn't even my particularly fancy. So, and I brought them up there, and it was harmless coming down. And we didn't go up Mount Philo. We went down a smaller hill, and it was just pussy snow, and we went down a small, much smaller hill, out in Underhill near the Snow Bowl. And they said, this isn't bad at all. I said, yeah, it's just not. They're just really fun sleds with big kind of ski runners on them. And they were happy to be outside. And a couple of them were having some depressing moments because this winter's so tough. But I forced them out. And, of course, I like going down some of these big notches. But you can go down a smaller hill. It's joyful to go sledding. We all did it as kids. We can still do it.
That's Kathy O'Brien. She is a sledding enthusiast. And when she's not on her sled, she's showing houses as a real estate agent. Kathy, thank you so much for telling us about how you have fun in the wintertime.
All right. Thank you so much. Everybody have a good day.
We're talking about ways to enjoy the winter weather, whether you like it or lump it. You can't live in Vermont if you can't make it through winter. So we are sharing our favorite activities and tips for beating the winter blues. You can call us with yours. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Again, 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Pictures are welcome if you've got them. Let's go to Don in Mount Holly. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Congratulations, as always, on a wonderful show, and your previous guest was just terrific. My favorite activity is a year-round activity, and that is square dancing. And I'm beyond the baby boomer age, but I will say this, it is the perfect fit for those who are into that time period in their life. It is good exercise. It is wonderful socialization. It's inexpensive. It does all the good things that the baby boomers are being told to do, but it's not limited to that age group. We've got young people involved also. We are in a club in Rutland that is over 35 years old, one of 13 clubs in the state. We are always looking for new members, and they can contact me as you wish in various ways, including a website for our club.
Well, Don, thank you so much. That's a great idea. You know, you can't always be outside, so if you want to warm up, Don says square dancing, great way to hang out with friends and keep a little bit warm. Let's go to Nils in Duxbury. Hi, Nils. Go ahead.
Hi. Great show, as always. You know, we do downhill and cross-country skiing. My young son loves to go up in the woods. We were up in the woods yesterday with our powder sleds. I have a sauna, you know, a traditional wood-fired center sauna that I use. I do use it year-round, of course, but in the wintertime, at this point, it's hard to imagine not having access to one. And, you know, people in northern climates all over the world for going back thousands of years, literally, have relied on this. And, I was listening to a show, and I wasn't going to stop and call, but the gal from Florida really struck, because if you're living here and you're not used to it, or even those of us that have lived here some of us all our lives, gosh darn it, it gets cold in the wintertime. And it's a really nice way to kind of go to the beach anytime you want, and definitely recommend it. And of course there's lots of other health benefits too, but
yeah, Nils, that sounds great. So Nils is from Duxbury. Everybody head over to Duxbury. We're all going to go to Nils' house. He built a sauna. He even knows how to say it. And we're going to hang out there tonight. Nils, thanks for the call. We'll see you in a couple of hours. And we're going to also read a couple more emails. Vermont Life, I assume not the magazine, maybe somebody who thinks of themselves as Vermont Life, or maybe the magazine, writes, I love winter air and sun and the crunch of snow under my feet when it's so cold like it has been the past few weeks. I also love making suet for the birds, and it's a perfect time for trying out all kinds of soup recipes. All right, whatever it takes to get you through the winter, we want to hear about it. And if you need some advice, like our friend who just moved here from Florida, you can also write in with that. Go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition, or call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we are embracing the cold and snow. Some of us love both, some of us don't. But short of fleeing to LA, there's not much you can do about it, so you may as well find a way to get through the winter with your sanity and good humor intact. VPR commentator Darren Higgins finds joy in what winter reveals.
The snow itself remembers every deer track and vole path. It's all there, in crust and ice as hard as shale beneath the softer upper layers. And when the sun comes, these old moments emerge. The walk I took last weekend, the fox's nighttime dash through the field, the riverine tunnelings of hungry mice. It's all still there. I know, another foot of snow, or 10 or 20 below zero, is a steep price to pay for beauty. But I'll enjoy the freeze while I can. We'll be scraping spring's mud off our boots before long, and the owls will return home, retreating with the cold.
All right, so if you watch the snow for signs of the creatures that mostly remain unseen, or if there's something else altogether that enchants you about winter, our number is 1-800-639-2211, and we want to hear about it. We're talking about how we get through the lean months, the frigid months, the months where a summer breeze feels like an ancient memory. You can also post your tips on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. You can add pictures there to tell us and show us what you're doing. But again, our number, 1-800-639-2211. And let's go to Judith calling in from Lincoln. Hi, Judith. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am an equine massage therapist, and I work outside in all kinds of weather year-round. And my favorite saying is, there's no bad weather, there's only bad clothes. So I wear heavy quilted coveralls in the winter. I have really good boots. I keep an extra pair of gloves or mittens tucked inside the waistband of my pants, so I always have a warm pair to put on. I keep extra socks and boots with me. You know, the only way to get through winter in Vermont, because it's going to be cold, is to embrace it, come to grips with the reality of it, and take care of your creature comforts.
Judith, that's such great advice. It's totally true. If you stay warm, you're going to be so much happier. If you can just at least keep your hands and feet warm. Thanks for that call. Let's go to Brian in Derby Line. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Jane. I'm originally from San Jose, California. I lived my whole life there. Also spent some time in Los Angeles. And I moved here in December 2012. And I was deathly afraid of the winter because we don't have anything like this out there. And for the first month, I couldn't even leave the house. But a young lady that I moved in with had a puppy, a Labrador Border Collie hybrid. And all he wanted to do was go outside. And I had to say to myself, if this dog can go outside in this weather, so can I. And so I started taking them outside and realized that a lot of dogs, especially dogs like that, actually do their best work in cold weather. They can run for a long time. And so that is what gets me out during the winter time. And I forget about the cold. I forget about how long I'm out there. And, you know, a lot of other people won't go out because it's cold. So it gives the dog a lot of freedom. You know, I don't even have to put them on a leash.
Yeah, Brian, your advice is get a dog. If you want to enjoy the winter, get a dog. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for calling in. Let's take another turn here, because one of the things that many of us still have to do out in the wintertime is drive. We've got to get to work. Some of us have to commute. You got things you need to do. You may need to buy groceries. So we're joined now by Sue Minter, Vermont's transportation secretary, to hear just a little bit about how the state's plow drivers are holding up. Secretary Minter, thanks for joining us on a state holiday. No holiday for the plows, though, I imagine.
Absolutely not, and thanks for having us on, Jane.
So let's just crunch some numbers first. How much salt have you used so far this winter?
Well, this is another record-breaking winter so far, and we're only in mid-February, so we've got a long way to go. We have used, at this point, over 96,000 tons of salt and spent over $21 million on our road maintenance for winter. That's quite a bit more than we had spent last year at this same time. And last year was a record-breaking winter as well. So a lot of pressure on our budgets, and our folks have been out at it hard all winter, and in particular this month. I was just looking at the log from our Transportation Operations Center and seeing that since the beginning of February, pretty much every 2 days we've had storms that have been anywhere from 4 to 12 inches depending on where you're in the state. So our folks have been at it sort of round the clock trying to deal with getting our folks who want to embrace winter or not, getting them where they need to go.
Do you use sand at all? You said 96 tons of salt. Does V-Trans use sand? 96,000 tons of salt. 96 tons would not be very much for all of the state roads. But do you use sand as well?
Absolutely. We are out pretty much with sand and salt, more salt than sand, and we also use what is called brine, which is a mixture of salt and water, primarily with some additives at times to help it stick to the roads. But each one of those tools in our toolbox are for certain applications at certain times. And one of the things we're noticing right now in this particular stretch isn't so much snow coming down in great accumulation, but the effect of wind blowing snow and the very, very cold temperatures. And in some cases, that's creating black ice on our roadways. So even when the roads are bare down, and we do focus primarily, we have highest priority road is our interstate. We work very hard to get that down to the pavement at least for one lane as quickly as we can after a storm. But even now, I want to just really stress that drivers need to slow down. Just like you put extra layers on your clothes to go out in this snow, please allow extra time for your commute, for your travel, because what we need is for drivers to slow down. We have a policy that is safe roads at safe speeds, and we really need the driving public to partner with us.
We actually got a press release today from the Middlesex Barracks of the State Police saying that that barracks alone has responded to about 32 reports of motor vehicle collisions or motor vehicles that have traveled off the roadway in just the last 3 days. And they say since January 1st, Vermont State Police and Middlesex have responded to about 219 collisions or motor vehicles that have traveled off the roadway. That's a lot of sliding around. So two things. First of all, Sue Minter, AOT snowplows have also been involved in collisions where people driving too fast or trying to get around the plows have actually hit the vehicles. So that goes directly to your point about slowing down. But also, are state snowplows having trouble keeping up with the conditions, whether it's just too cold for them or too much snow?
Well, I think that we do the best job we can with the number of folks we have on the road, and I can't tell you how impressed I am with the dedication and hard work of these individuals. They are out there round the clock and applying the right tools to meet the situation. But our drivers do have to understand we cannot be 100% of the time everywhere. And so it really is a partnership. And it's also about not only speed, but keeping distance with the vehicle in front of you, and also having the proper tires. We're really aware of concern that people who may think that if they have all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive, they don't need snow tires. We recognize that tires are very important and actually have a very significant impact in their ability to slow down and stop in an emergency. And also, as I mentioned, we've had, especially in this last week, with these cold temperatures, very serious problem of black ice. I think people, myself included, generally think of black ice as a problem when you have rain and freezing. But here we have the problem of very cold base. And the snow, the thin, wispy snow that's out on the roadway, when tires cross that, it can have a quick freeze and instantly a black ice situation that may change when the sun comes out. So right now, people, even though they may have dry pavement for a while and think they can go at their average speeds or at the vehicle speeds for the interstate, we need you to understand that at these temperatures, that situation can change very quickly. And we believe that the cause of these accidents, many if not most of them, are really about speed and conditions. And it is winter in Vermont, and there will be snow and ice, and we need to work together to make sure everyone gets where they're going safely. That's job number one for us, and we're working really hard to get you there safely.
So just quickly before I let you go, Secretary Minter, what is the actual budget for winter plowing and salting? I mean, do you just pull from sort of pilfer from another part of the V-Trans budget if you hit that record that you're talking about, $21 million already spent?
You got it. Really, we have budgeted for winter this year $26 million, so we haven't broken past that yet, but we probably will. What then happens is we have to adjust all of the summer maintenance, whether that's paving, mowing, cleaning out culverts, all kinds of other summer maintenance that is part of that overall maintenance budget. So we really don't trim. We try to meet the demand in winter, but where we have to trim is often in what we do over the summer months.
That's Sue Minter. She's Vermont's Transportation Secretary. Thanks again for being with us, Secretary Minter.
Thank you. Enjoy winter, and please drive safely.
Yeah, absolutely. That is certainly a truism. You're going to have to just slow down when conditions are bad. Absolutely. We have more notes from people telling us how they get through winter. A couple people also echoing what we heard earlier about dressing for the weather. Eliza in Shrewsbury says, when it gets this cold, here's what my husband always says, nothing works like wool. And Maggie says, I hated the winter until about 3 years ago when I finally bought a smart winter wardrobe. Now I barely even notice it. Dress for success. Oh, and not having a car also makes things much more enjoyable. I bundle up and I am out the door ready to go. And then Susan has this advice for our Florida transplant who's having a hard time with her first winter here. Susan says, if you don't want to ski, get snowshoes or a sled or a pole and some creepers and walk on the road or go to town and walk. You have to go out. It will help you feel warmer when you're inside and get some sunshine and fresh air. And second, get some books about winter. The Stokes Guide to Nature in Winter, Bernd Heinrich's Winter World, and Peter Marchand's Life in the Cold. They will make your walks really interesting. And take a camera with you. When it's minus 20, go out and blow bubbles. Really? All right, we'll give it a shot. Thanks for that, Susan. And let's go to Karen in Guilford. Hi, Karen. You're on.
Hi. A couple things. Snow gives moonlight in Vermont a whole new meaning, but also the problem with deer ticks and fleas from our mild winters. This is nature's way of keeping ticks and fleas under control.
Karen, thanks for that. Yeah, ticks, as I understand it, you're right, don't survive when it's this cold and there's that much snowpack. Thanks for your note. Kat's calling in from Charlotte. Hi, Kat. Go ahead.
Hi. So this morning as I left the house at -8, I went to hot yoga, Tapna Yoga on Pine Street. About 110 degree difference.
Ooh, and that works for you in the wintertime?
You heat up the core. It's awesome. Exercise, and it's very warm. In contrast, my stepson was going off to ski at Mad River.
All right. Big temperature difference there. Thank you, Kat. Barbara is calling in from Leominster, New Hampshire. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Wonderful show. I stopped my way to get through the winter. That is feeding Yo and Gary. They happen to be two wood stoves that I have to feed through the winter.
Their name?
And put away the wood in the summer. And I happen to totally love bringing in the wood. I know it sounds crazy, but it's fascinating. I have found a lot of woolly bears out in my wood pile and snake skins that I gave to my grandson. So that's the way I get through it. And in between, I rest in the house, and I'm taking up crocheting this year, so I'm crocheting a big old blanket.
Barbara, thank you for that, and I just have to ask, why Gary?
It's a Garrison stove.
Uh-huh.
It's a wood stove made in Claremont, New Hampshire, back in the 70s, and I purchased it from a neighbor of mine. It's a big stove, and it's a strange stove. We've had to get used to each other. And it's a difficult stove, I think, to manage because you have to be right on it and watch, make sure the wood, you put it in at the right time, otherwise she'll burn right down on you.
Well, it's good that, Gary at least has a personality. Thank you for sharing that with us. Before we go, let's talk about one more thing you can do if you're really hardcore in the wintertime. Chris Yeager is president of the Green Mountain Adventure Racing Association, which is putting on an event this month called the Frigid Infliction. Hi, Chris. Nice to have you on the program.
I'm glad to be here.
The Frigid Infliction doesn't actually sound all that pleasant. What are you actually doing?
It's teams of two or three are out in the woods for 10 hours, and they're doing a variety of different things. They're on snowshoes. They're on skis. They're in snow post-holing, which is snowshoeing, but you can't use your snowshoes. You're just traipsing through snow. They may have a Tyrolean traverse over a big ravine, so there's a ropes discipline involved. And the part that makes it the most interesting is it's all navigation-based. So they have a big map with points on it, and they have a compass, no GPS, they have a compass, and they figure out how they want to get to that next point. So if they want to go out of their way to go use the trail, great. If they want to go straight at it through the woods, great. It's whatever they want to do.
Can we just pause for a moment on post-holing? Because I don't know how you do it, but post-holing for me is when you're walking through very deep snow, as you said, without snowshoes, and every step, or worse, every fourth step, you punch through the snow, and then you've got to pick your foot up and get over to the next step. It is like the worst part of winter walking, and it makes me so cranky. Why would anybody want to do that for fun?
Honestly, it's a small part of the race, but I think it's also the fact it's an adventure and it's a challenge. And we have people that, during the event, they're tired, they may be cold, they're exhausted, they're lost, right? Maybe they're even in squabbling with each other a little bit. But then, as part of this course, they're going to places they would never go to before. They're seeing things they'd never see. They're doing things they didn't even realize they could do. And they get to the finish, and it's warm, and there's a massage therapist and a great dinner and a bar. And they sit and relax and warm up, and then they have these amazing stories to share with each other about all these things they didn't saw while they were out in the woods.
All right, now you're talking massage therapist and great dinner at the end of a winter adventure. That sounds pretty good.
Absolutely. And you have to remind yourselves of those things when, you know, the race is starting at 5 a.m. and it's dark and it's cold and you need to get moving to warm up.
That's Chris Yeager. He's president of the Green Mountain Adventure Racing Association. The GMARA is hosting the Frigid Infliction on Saturday, February 28th at Bolton Valley Resort. And we have a link at vpr.net. Chris, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking about how to beat the winter weather. Mark says on a recent trip to Montreal, we passed by the northern tip of Lake Champlain once we entered Canada and saw a complete village of shanties, snack trucks, hockey rinks, and hundreds of people out enjoying the winter weather. I've never seen anything like this in Vermont, certainly not in and around the Mallets Bay area. Sure, there's the occasional pond hockey, but there's so much good access and thick ice. Why aren't there more of these shanty villages? We have so much ice, but nobody using it. Mark, I sense an organizing effort in your future. And we got a note from Marianne who says, I wish I was retired. I'd be out snowshoeing. And Ray in Hinesburg, who penned a poem he calls February. It says, the sun is brighter, the days are longer, the skies are bluer, the snow is deeper, the birds are louder. What's not to like about February? All right, speaking of birds being louder, coming up, we're going to get one more take on how winter is affecting Vermonters. Naturalist Brian Pfeiffer will fill us in on how those birds withstand the sub-zero temperatures and lots of snowpack. And you can call if you have a question about that. Again, our number, 1-800-639-2211. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We've been talking about ways to beat the winter blues, but for some of our neighbors, it's all about tweeting the blues away. If you've been out in the early morning lately, you may be hearing the welcome arrival of more bird song. But how do those tiny feathered creatures survive in those sub-zero temperatures with feet of snow on the ground? Writer and consulting field naturalist Brian Pfeiffer joins us now to fill us in a little bit. Hi, Brian. Nice to have you back.
Hi, Jane. Nice to be back.
One of the reasons we actually thought to talk about birds is that this weekend has been the annual Great Backyard Bird Count, where people around the country and actually around the world can get out and tally the birds that they're seeing. The bird count started on Friday and it ends today. What birds can people around Vermont see right now?
A lot of the backyard bird counters are counting what they're seeing at the feeders. So everything from chickadees to some of these common redpolls that are visiting now, or even another really cool winter visitor called Bohemian Waxwing, which is showing up at some of the ornamental trees, feeding on our crabapples still.
Yeah,
so
we
just
get those
about
at
anything.
At my house, we get those for one day. They just strip the tree completely. We have a berry tree, and then they take off.
You got to find them. You got to chase them because, here's how you identify a Bohemian Waxwing. I mean, they are Bohemian, right? They've got their black turtlenecks and their black berets on, and they're, you know, reading Allen Ginsberg. But they're actually nomadic. They're quirky. They're free spirits, right? They're Bohemians. But they actually breed in the northwestern portion of the continent, and they have this odd southeast migration some years. And in the last month or so, they've been showing up in Vermont. And what's great about Bohemian waxwings is they'll be in our cities, because that's where we have many of these ornamental crabapple trees. So they're neighborhood birds. They're remote in breeding, but neighborly to us in the winter.
Brian, we've got Louise from Chelsea on the line. She's been waiting to ask you a question. Louise, go right ahead. You're on the air. Louise, you still
Brian.
There? Yeah, hi, go ahead.
Hi, Louise.
Hi, Brian.
Hi there.
Last night, just before dark, actually, my husband and I saw a very tiny owl sitting on the top of one of our bird feeders. We've been here 15, 18 years, never have seen this owl before. And we looked it up, and maybe it's a sawwet, but I haven't fully investigated it yet.
You're in Chelsea, right?
On the border of Chelsea and Washington.
Yes. Odds are this is a sawwet owl, which is our smallest owl. It's a tiny, you hate to call them cute, but they are. And these things stand about 8 inches tall. Eastern screech owl is another small owl in Vermont, but we tend not to see them in the eastern Piedmont, the hills east of the Green Mountains. So this is a pretty hardy migratory owl that's going to be calling pretty soon. They get territorial. A lot of owls start calling this time of year. They like to get a jump on breeding.
Brian, talk a little bit more about that, because I mentioned that people may be hearing more birdsong. I certainly was out the other morning, and it was like a cacophony all of a sudden in February. There's snow on the ground, it's sub-zero temperatures, but you're hearing the birds. So what's happening? Yeah,
it's great. I mean, do not be fooled by this. Spring is not around the corner.
Aww.
Well, the amazing thing about how do birds deal with winter in Vermont, most of them leave town. I mean, we've got 250 or so bird species that might show up in Vermont in any given year, and only about 50 to 55 of them are year-round residents. So most of our birds deal with winter by leaving, by migrating. Those that stay, have all sorts of adaptations. This is not a big deal for them, even in this cold weather. And this time of year, we do. You walk out in the morning and you hear that cardinal singing or a house finch breaking out into song. These longer days get birds sort of amorous and thinking about the breeding season.
I'm sorry, did you say longer days?
Remind
us that that's actually happening.
Well, Groundhog's Day is actually significant. It falls about halfway between the winter solstice and the vernal equinox. And we've crossed this sort of arbitrary threshold, 10 hours of daylight. And I believe that happened on February 5th this year. In these longer days, the light is what triggers many birds to sing. You remember, Jane, a few years ago, this time of year, like in March, we were looking at 60s or 70s in terms of temperature.
Mm-hmm.
If birds time their breeding based on weather and temperature, it's not going to work for them, because the weather, we have these vagaries in weather and vagaries in temperature, great temperature fluctuations. What's more reliable is day length. And day length does all sorts of great things for wildlife this time of year. Birds start singing because they feel territorial. And the birds that have been with us all winter, many of them are now starting to sing.
So sing, they're sort of warming up their voices, but not quite breeding yet.
Not quite breeding yet. The males, it's all about turf. It's about establishing territory. And they define their territory by singing. And sunlight actually triggers the production of hormones in male birds. And it's kind of like, birdie Viagra. It really sort of gets them thinking about, making more birds. And so they start singing.
Well, it's great to hear them. I mean, even the birds that you've been seeing around, like the cardinals and the chickadees, just to hear them is such a welcome sign. I want to ask you, Brian, we've actually had a red-winged blackbird that's been at my feeder all winter, and it's the first time I've personally seen one go through winter here, but I understand that that's one of the species that's actually starting to change along with global climate change.
We are seeing more birds wintering farther north of their range. It's hard sometimes to attribute this to climate change. There's any number of reasons birds might shift their ranges. We play a role in this by feeding birds. Carolina wrens, northern cardinals do better when we feed them over the winter. That's not to say they depend on us for feeding. As I said, these birds do fine. I mean, they've been around, well, Archaeopteryx was around 150 million years ago, you know, about 3,000 times longer than we've been on the planet.
Yeah.
So these birds can handle the winter. But yeah, red-winged blackbird is one where you may see them at feeders, just one or in ones and twos over the winter in Vermont.
Brian Pfeiffer is a field naturalist and an expert in all kinds of winged creatures. We have a link to his website at vpr.net. Brian, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Jane.
All right, that wraps up our winter weather show. A lot of people telling us how they withstand it. Margaret says, get out and play in it with a child or a dog. It's hard not to frolic and romp. Brian in Newport Center says, my approach is positive thoughts like, it's so cozy, or is there any better feeling than coming into a warm house from the bitter cold? So whatever it takes, get yourself through the winter weather, and thank you so much for participating in our show today. Tomorrow on this program, the Teachers Union has been called one of the most powerful unions in the state, and it has a lot to say about education issues like school consolidation and whether teachers should be allowed to go on strike. Now the Vermont NEA has jumped into the debate over vaccinating school kids. Tomorrow we'll be speaking with Martha Allen, the head of the Vermont NEA, and you can send an email to vermontedition@vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.